You are here with Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski, and we are here today with the chair of the House Education Committee, Representative Jess Stairs from Westmoreland County. And we were talking in our first half hour about new legislation regarding the report card for all school districts so that we can compare school district by school districts in the event that people wanted to move in or just compare themselves to other school districts in the neighborhood. Now, in looking at the kinds of information that would be conducted for this report card, some of it seemed to me like way out of the realm of what most school districts would be using for their information gathering. For example, where do graduates go? You know, what kinds of careers are they successful in their careers and things of that nature? How does a school district who is, let's say, struggling, one of your 11 school districts who are struggling in the state, like Steelton High Spire or Philadelphia or Williamsburg, take the time to create all of this information that you're requesting of them? What's the process they have to do?
That's a good point. And of course, it might, before I begin to answer that, I can simply say that, okay, this is the bill that was reported out of the committee, and it was done this morning. Now, this bill, as we mentioned, the committee is the first stage in legislation, the Education Committee, and then it'll go to the Appropriation Committee to come up with an estimate of what the funding would be, to see what the cost would be. Certainly, to do anything, there is a cost associated with it. The Appropriation Committee's role will be to estimate, referred to it as a fiscal note, what is going to be the cost to the Commonwealth and to local school districts to get this information. Now, as the bill now stands, we are being rather inquisitive, I should say. We're asking for a lot of information. Not only the class size, the number of teachers, the information on the teacher with regard to their training and so forth, where the graduates are going, how many are going beyond high school to a post high school education. And so now much of this information is reported right now to the state, and the state has this, and on the other hand, much of this information is kept by the school district that is not reported to the state, and some of this information is new information. So, you pose a very good question. What is going to be the cost? And this is what the Appropriation Committee will tell us by their analysis. Now, if indeed, and we got to be practical too, I think we certainly want to get as much information that's possible to obtain, but also we want to do it under fiscal restraints, to get information that may be nice to know, but it's going to be quite costly. Then I think good judgment says, well, maybe this is something we can just forego and not do this. So my answer to that question, which is a very valid question, is that the Appropriation Committee is going to determine what the cost is going to be. Now, if indeed they tell us that certain questions that we want to know information about is going to be quite costly and it's going to put a burden on the districts, then I think we want to step back a step or two and maybe make some alterations to what information we want to have. But if, on the other hand, they would say that with the minimal amount of expenditures of what they're doing now, this information is obtainable, then I think we want to proceed and get that information. So, I guess philosophically, I'm a fiscal conservative. So, I guess I answered the question by saying that the Appropriation Committee, the next stage, will get a cost estimate, and certainly the intent of, as I speak for myself, the prime sponsor will be, is to get as much information that's pertinent, that is fiscally prudent, and certainly not to put a burden onto the school districts. And I guess we're getting back to the unfunded mandates, because this is a mandate that school districts must do this. So I would be my intent, and I think many colleagues of mine would also agree with me, that if indeed we're going to this is going to be a cost, then I think the state has to certainly, be there to stand up front and meet its obligations of paying for this. What the cost may be, I do not know. And I can say, much of this information is gathered, and I'm kind of afraid to say that much information is gathered and is put away in somebody's archives, in somebody's back room, and it's not available because. I think the secret here is to get this information that we have already accumulated, get it out for the public to see. So to me, most of the information that we acquire will not cost significantly much more money, will not be a burden on the districts, but certainly we will find that out shortly. So just to make it readily available. And I think it's a waste of money to some extent that if we collect information and we don't make it readily available, that if you want it, you can find it. Well, it turned out most people don't pursue it, whether they don't have the time or don't have the interest or don't want to get the hassle of trying to get through it. So it's my hope that we can get information as much as possible. It's still at a reasonable amount that it's not going to put a burden on anybody, the state. And then, of course, once the Appropriation Committee determines this, we'll go forth with the amount of information we collect, and then it must go in front of the full House of Representatives to either approve it or disapprove it or modify it, then on to the Senate, then to the governor. So it's a long journey, but we made the first step.
Well, it's an admirable one as well, because it actually, relates an accountability factor for school districts, which I think is an appropriate response. And secondly, for a person who has attempted to try to find demographic information about school districts in this state, I concur completely. Sometimes it takes 10 phone calls before you find the appropriate person who has the information that you want. And I'm assuming that you have, this is going to be published in one volume in one place, instead of 15 different places, which is where it exists today. I mean, you call the Department of Ed, the Department of Statistics, it's all over the place today. It's not in one specific location. And if one can pick it up on the internet, I mean, that's another, either through the Department of Ed or PennLink or whatever, it would be certainly helpful to people like us. Now, in talking about...
I can just interject. You say the internet, and I remember watching as a young child Groucho Marx, and a duck come down. So that would be a very key part of it. The internet, certainly by getting on the internet, will be able to find information of any school district in Pennsylvania. Also, I might add that your children who go to that school will be bringing the information home with them. It'll be dispersed directly through your child. Information mailing to the parents, and then by the internet. So obviously, it will be all this volumes of information will be concisely in one place, easy to obtain. So sorry to interrupt there.
Oh, no, that's all right. That's what we're here for. One of the things that I discovered in my own search and in my own research in this state is how diversified this state is. Pittsburgh is like an island unto itself with regard to the amount of funding it gets through grants, through private foundations, and Philadelphia is another entity in itself, and Luzerne County is another entity in itself. Reading School District has a 58% turnover with migrant workers. How can you possibly create legislation and bills that are or standards for such a diverse? You have a tremendously rural population, as you have in Westmoreland County, and then to try and compare it to Philadelphia or Pittsburgh or Harrisburg is just an insurmountable task. How do you possibly? It's such a diverse state. How do you possibly integrate all this information into the kinds of legislation you want?
Well, you very clearly stated Pennsylvania, and even in Westmoreland County that you stated, it's a diverse county, very much part of the Industrial Revolution and the coal and steel industry, a lot of farms, but it's transforming in itself. Westmoreland County is transforming it into, small coal mining towns, small rural farm communities, until to suburbia. We're getting the growth from the Pittsburgh area, moving out into Westmoreland County. So, you know, even our county cannot be very clearly defined anymore because it's changing drastically. And I'm sure our listeners, no matter where they're from in Pennsylvania, they're noticing change too. And even the places that aren't changing too much, you go over the hill or two or in the valley or two, and there's some places it's considerably different. So we are a very diverse state. You know, it's remarkable that we're able to govern ourselves being so diverse. We have the big cities at each end of the state, and in between, still some pretty big cities in between, a lot of trees and a lot of farmland and so forth. So, we are unique. I think very unique state in Pennsylvania, and although maybe our uniqueness and difference. Has made us a great state because we are able to, mold all the different ideas and different thoughts and different backgrounds and, mix it all together. And as preparing a fine meal and coming out in a gourmet dinner and so forth. And then, of course, sometimes because of our diversity, we've dropped the ball, too. But I'm just trying to make the point that it's difficult to sit in Harrisburg and say that one size fits all. I mean, if you think you can govern this state by, staying in the capital and trying to say, well, this should be good for Pennsylvania, and you're really going to be very mistaken. You got to get out to the hinterlands and the corners of our state to see our differences and be able to do what's best for the state. So that's one good thing about the General Assembly. You know, we have our shortcomings, and sometimes our members get in trouble and things go wrong and so forth. But we do. We are a diverse body. I look to the person sits next to me, or either side of me. He's different, and in front of me, we're from all types of ages and ethnic origins and training and education and so forth. And so there's no cookie cutter down here that one size fits all. And because we represent different segments of the population and different sections of the states, and we get down here, and for the most part, we do make our share of mistakes, but for the most part, we're able to put it all together, and the state does well. So, and education is certainly no exception, and it's difficult, and that's why we try to give as much local control with state assistance as we can to let the locals who know their situation the best try to make the decisions. And I know there's conflict sometimes, but it's just like in a family. We have the father and the mother and the children, and we have differences of opinion, and people want different things, but we have to sit down and work things out as you would in a family, and certainly resolve the very diverse issues of the Commonwealth.
Also, I'd like to mention to our audience, if they don't realize it, but House members are here every 2 years, whereas senators are here for 4 years. And so you have, by the time anybody knows, it takes, if you've moved from one place to another, it takes time to adjust to wherever it is that you are. And to constantly be in elections every 2 years must be kind of a turmoil for a lot of House members. But I understand that it's, a necessity, and it's the way it's set up. And good or bad, that's the way it is. I wanted to know, since we were talking about the diversity of the state, how possibly we can get standards of excellence for everyone in the state when we're comparing students from the farmlands of Westmoreland County to the city streets of Philadelphia. How can we possibly create standards that are equitable for all students?
Well, certainly, a good question. And of course, our Department of Education, they are the agency that must come up with that and meet those needs. And it's a gigantic, a gigantic job. We've been maybe kind of behind other states in adopting standards. And probably one reason is because, you know, of our diversity and such the vastness of our state. You know, we have made the initial reaction regarding to the math and, of course, to the English and the writing comprehension. So we made a start, and, you know, this is we're not there yet. Obviously, there's other academic subjects than that, and I think we got behind early on. Back when Governor Casey was attempting to begin this movement, it was referred to as the Chapter 5 and the outcomes and so forth. And we was kind of crossing a line between the academic subjects and other areas. And, of course, it became a political protest of great magnitude. And, of course, I think that delayed it, you know, the term the OBE, the outcome-based education, and set off a storm of a protest across the state, you know, getting into other areas that were not academic. Even as the state moves forward with the academic subject, it is not without criticism. So it's been, you know, moving very slow and very deliberately. You know, the next area, whether it be environmental standards, physical education standards, or even science standards. And, of course, when we talk into the standards in science, a very controversial issue comes up there in regard to the evolution in creativity, so, you know, creation theory. So, what, you know, it's a, you know, a difficult journey. So, you know, I think with great care and great caution, we have to continue to move forward. And I think the bottom line is when our young people, whether they are from a small rural town or a large metropolitan city, we're living in a world that doesn't separate the small town from the big city, but we're living in a world that it's global. It's a world that you're competing with students from Singapore or Japan or Germany or Mexico or what have you. So, you know, we're not just preparing tomorrow's citizens or tomorrow's leaders to be able to stay in that hometown and to continue to work there as their ancestors or their parents have done many years before that. But they may move out of state, out of the country, or even if they do live in the same town that they grew up in and they move back home, so to speak, that the company that they work for will be certainly competing on the global workplace, and employees of their company certainly are going to have to compete favorably, or that company will be out of business, obviously, or that company will move to a foreign shore. So, you know, we're not just talking about, you know, a difference between a small town and a city down the road and so forth, and the differences there. But so it's a challenge to be able to bring everybody up to a place that even though their backgrounds might be different, we have to have a school setting that, you know, that in mathematics, that it answers the mathematical questions and is able to determine where a student would stand in that. And if and I think the important thing with regard to the standards is that if students are not measuring up, you're in third grade and you're not being able to do your times tables and your mathematics tables and so forth, and getting this good start, that we're going to be able to say we have to stop and do, we want to call it remedial work and catch-up work, that a third grader is doing third grade work. And I guess even more important than math, and that's very important, is reading. You know, and the governor has been stressing the Read to Succeed program with state and federal monies, that you know, our third and fourth graders, that if they're not able to read at their grade level, and if nothing is done to correct that, you can bank on the fact that as they grow older and in progress through school, that are going to get further and further behind, and you know, they're either going to become a discipline problem, maybe have to be placed in a special ed, which is an extra cost, or drop out of school, and so the problems just start to magnify. So it behooves us to have our students, no matter where they're from in Pennsylvania, the smallest, and I probably won't say one-room school, which aren't too many of those anymore, or to a large elementary school or middle school, in a city environment versus a rural environment, you know, when you add one and one, okay, where you are, the answer is still the same. So it's not three or four or five, it's still two. So there's basic academic things that we all have to know to be able to achieve well as citizens in this Commonwealth.
You are listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We are here today with the chairman of the House Education Committee, Representative Jess Stairs from Westmoreland County. You can call us anytime at 877-PRO-KIDS. That's toll-free, 877-PROKIDS, or email us at ProKids, PROKIDS, at RLC.net. Now, we have a few more minutes here, and one of the things that I've been in this state for several years, and I noticed that every year there's a new administration, there's a new focus and direction at the Department of Education. And it must be turmoil for local school districts every time a new governor comes in to play. They changed the focus. It was OBE. Now it's standards of learning. We have the next governor in, and whatever the next focus is. Is there a way that we can keep on track? Now, we know I'm an educator, and we've talked about this many times on our program. We know from the research that it takes 5 to 10 years for a new concept to be programmed successfully within a school district. So every time we change with a new administration and we change our focus, we're literally uprooting them and starting all over again. Is there a way we can keep some kind of stability? And maybe that's the reason why change happens so slowly in the state of Pennsylvania, because the focus keeps changing constantly. Is there a way we can keep the focus and maintain some, you know, track record here in the state?
Well, that's a tough one there. And I think you know, not to take the criticism away from the state, certainly you're correct. One governor has an initiative and he wants to follow, and of course the next governor alters the course, and it is very, any educator out there, let alone a parent, but anybody out there that follows this can get very confused and bewildered. I guess my thinking, and I'm speaking in very general terms, education in itself, you know, in my brief years in it, I found it to be very trendy. Educators kind of follow a concept or a principle or so forth, and after 5 or 6 years or a certain time, a period of time, another trend takes its place. It's almost like the idea you have to have a new car, every couple years, and get something new. And that's something that I've kind of I noticed about education, that and that's just, it's not just Pennsylvania, that's United States. And I guess that, just to answer, I'll answer it very simplistic, but I guess when you have so much input from so many different people, this is what happens. You know, if I was sitting here at this time and I looked at my watch now and it was and it's, say, for example, it's 10:30, and I was visiting, maybe in France, I was visiting with the Ministry of Education in Paris, and he would look at his watch at 10:30, and he would say, at 10:30, I know what every school child in the country of France is doing at this time. He's on page 75 of his mathematics booklet. In America, if I was asking the Secretary of Education in Pennsylvania, Secretary Hickok, what are the students in Pennsylvania doing at 10:30 this morning? Well, Gene would be, he'd have to shake his head. He had no idea. And then that's not a criticism of him, because that's America. You know, we are, and I guess Europeans may think we're still barbarians or uncivilized, but certainly, I mean, this is the America, the opportunity to be creative and to let local school districts and local people kind of set the agenda and so forth, with some state and some national assistance. But so I guess that kind of maybe answers why we are, in America, do as we do. you know, we think we're doing the right thing, and maybe things don't go as well. We get a report, such as we did back in the early 1980s about a nation at risk. Our schools failing and so forth, or Sputnik before that, and the Russians are passing us up, and so we revamp what we're doing because of a crisis and so forth. I think in this country we're not the long term like some countries would be. Stay the course for a long term. Americans want a quick fix, want something done immediately. We don't want to wait for a couple years. We're instant success. So as when we see something not working, or somebody disagrees with it, they propose something else, and as a result, they get enough followers to adhere to that principle, and so we jump onto another bandwagon and so forth. So I guess in due time, you make a circle where you start out, you make changes three or four times, and eventually you come back to where you started at. So do I say that's right? Not necessarily, but I don't think we have the power, the czar of education, czar, whoever it would be, the Ministry of Education in France or any other country, to say this is the way it's going to be, and we're going to do that, and whether it's right or wrong, we're still going to do it. So with this creativism we have in the United States, I think we have developed into the economic leader of the world, military leader of the world, and envy of the rest of the world. And a couple years ago we were worrying that Japan was going to overtake us, and Germany was going to overtake us, and so forth. And their economies now are in shambles, or coming out of shambles, and we keep prodding on. So, we all criticize public education, and certainly it can stand its share of criticism. But in spite of its problems, what we have today, I think, is a result of public education, both the basic and higher education, because I say that because the overwhelming majority of our students have attended public education. So not that we can't get better, we have to do better, and it would be nice if we could stay on the same page for a while, and before we jump to and get all the information on that page before we jump to the next page.
In the last 2 minutes of our broadcast, would you like to sum up where you think the direction of public education is going in the state of Pennsylvania for the future?
I'm very optimistic. I see problems, and I'm aware of concerns out there, and there are many. From funding, an equitable way of funding our schools, to seeing that our schools are, producing the type of students that we should have. Like I say, along the way, there's stumbling blocks, very big stumbling blocks sometimes with school violence, and making sure that we're creating an environment where, teachers can teach and students can learn, and the proper funding, and all the things that we find that present challenges that we must overcome. And I feel confident that we will. We're putting a lot of emphasis in education, whether it be this our Commonwealth or United States, and I feel that even though we're succeeding for many students, we're graduating each year in Pennsylvania a lot of fine students. They do well, either going to the military, to college, or to trade schools or technical education, or even go out and get a job. So we're doing it. We're doing a great job. Could we do a better job? Certainly, yes. There's many students that are falling through the cracks, so to speak, are not getting education. Many times the opportunities are there, but they don't take advantage of it. And sometimes the opportunities are not there. So I think we have to, make sure that every school district, whether it's in a small rural area or a big city, is able to have the tools and the wherewithal. And certainly, I look at this new age of technology as a great equalizer. I think the schools that were kind of left behind, that got behind and kind of in a rut, that maybe not progressing like they can be, if we can certainly in many ways help them, but we can take a shortcut with the technology that we have. Just one kind of kind of story that I could share that I have observed myself. I was in a country of Poland last year for approximately a week, and in a project through Penn State and agriculture project, and I had an observation. You know, I was walking down the streets of some of the mostly the major cities, because in even in Poland, change is even slower in the countryside than it is in the big cities. But as I was walking down the Warsaw and other cities, I was amazed by the number of cell phones, particularly young people, because they're probably the first ones to pick up new ideas. But they would be talking on the cell phones. Now, you know, they have a very poor wires and a poor infrastructure, but they're leapfrogging that. It took us 50 years to get an infrastructure and wired phones. They're just leapfrogging. They're going to the cell phone. So, you know, technology will be a great equalizer, and I think we've got to take advantage of it.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski with Children Come First. We were here with Representative Jess Stairs, who's the chair of the House Education Committee. And you can call us toll-free at 877-PRO-KIDS, 877-PRO-KIDS. And we'll see you again the next program of Children Come First. Thank you for joining us.